Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Brother For Real radio show. I was trying to wait Grover out, but Grover is a little long-winded. How's everybody doing today?
Brother had a lot to say in his music there, boy.
By the way, though, bro, I got to do something else now. We got to move on with the show, bro. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Brother For Real radio show. We're going to talk tonight about how we can make progress. You know, I'm going to start off, brothers, with one of Dr. King's quote that's not a part of his I have a dream speech.
Well,
Dr. King said this: one of the greatest tragedies of life is that men seldom bridge the gulf between practice and profession, between doing and saying. Persistent schizophrenia leaves so many of us tragically divided against ourselves. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, we proudly confess or profess certain sublime and noble principles. But on the other hand, we sadly practice the way that meet the very antithesis of these principles.
Mm-hmm.
How often are our lives characterized by a high blood pressure of creeds and an anemia of deeds? We talk eloquently about our commitment to the principles of Christianity, and yet our lives are saturated with the practice of paganism. We proclaim our devotion to democracy, but we sadly practice the very opposite of the democratic creed. We talk passionately about peace, and at the same time, we assiduously prepare for war. We make our fervent pleas for the high road of justice, and then we tread unflinchingly the low road of injustice. This strange dichotomy, this agonizing gulf between the ought and the is, represents the tragic theme of man's earthly pilgrimage. Mm. Now, Dr. Martin Luther King in his speech, Strength to Love. As we already know, love is the answer. Joseph, we were talking about it earlier. It's a battle between right and wrong, not between white and black, or whatever. The battle is between right and wrong. And what happened in Memphis is a pretty good example of that. The battle is between right and wrong. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Leon Gatewood. I have Robert Gatewood and Mr. Joseph Kelly Gatewood on the line too with us tonight. How you doing tonight, brothers?
Hey, Leon. How you doing, brother? How you doing, Joseph?
How you brother doing, man?
Talk how to you doing, Rob? Doing great.
How you doing in D.C., Robert? What's going on in D.C., Robert?
Man, I'll tell you what, Leon. I got a... I listened to your passage about Dr. King, from Dr. King, and I know that we're going to talk about Tyree Nichols, but I have something else on my mind today. And it's from a business perspective on how, it's old as the black community itself, and it speaks to how blacks are less, how people are, particularly people in the black community, are less forgiving of mistakes that black businesses make than other communities. You have like one shot, one chance in many cases to get it right if you're a black business, whereas other communities have almost an infinite amount of errors to make, and people just keep going back and back again. And I really have a serious problem with that. So that's my burden I'm carrying today. But I don't take it from the standpoint that I forgive poor behavior or poor service. As a matter of fact, I've made a proclamation that this month should be the month that black businesses declare and redouble their commitment to providing good professional service. Make that one of your causes this month. If you're a black business, that you're going to provide service and make the patrons that have decided to give you their money, make them proud of you. But by the same token, I'm getting a little impatient with these folks who have holding these black businesses to this almost impossible standard of perfection while giving other businesses a pass in other communities. Anyway, that's what's on my mind today.
All right. That's a song we've been singing a very long time. And like I said, tonight, we're talking about how we can make progress on those, that as well as very as other issues. Y'all wondering why I'm chewing, what's making this noise? I just cooked the best pork chops and shrimp I ever cooked in my life. Anyway, yeah, Rob, that's been one of our songs we've been singing for a very long time. We're very impatient with ourselves. And somebody else can do something to you, Lord have mercy. You wouldn't believe what's going on in my hometown. Well, your native town. Anyway, how you doing tonight, Joseph?
What's going on?
Negroes.
Hey, you talking to me, though?
How about something else? Hey, Joseph.
Hey, Leon, how you doing?
Great, bro. What's going on? What's going on in the Queen City?
Man, the Queen City is a mess. This is the first time since I lived in the Queen City. I do not want to be here.
What?
The Queen City right now is a bastion of injustice.
Mm.
We have a government, and a very non-responsive government when it comes to the needs of the average people in Charlotte. The government in Charlotte has just decided that they're just going to trample over average people and give big business and Wall Street investors a free hand at Charlotte, North Carolina. And that's being done to the peril of the most vulnerable among us. Right now, Charlotte has the highest percentage of homes owned by investors in any other country, in any other city in the nation. American Dream, which is home ownership, no longer is attainable by the majority of people in Charlotte.
Joseph.
Yeah.
Clarify what you mean when you say the most homes owned by investors.
Well,
break it down in other words,
you have people coming into Charlotte with portfolios of money, you know, in the millions of dollars, and they're targeting certain neighborhoods, and for the most part, they're targeting what they call affordable homes, homes that they can go in and buy a lot of them, and then turn around and rent them out. Homes that typically that would be bought by time home buyers, young couples just getting married and trying to raise a family and start to, you know, build a financial base through homeownership. That's pretty much not available in Charlotte anymore.
And I bet I'm going to guess that they're renting them out at a very high percentage. A large percentage higher than a mortgage would cost.
Most of these houses that they're renting out, these same homes, folks could get a mortgage to rent them out. They could probably, if they could get a mortgage to buy them, the mortgage would probably on average be about 40% less than what they're having to pay for rent.
But Joseph, would I be getting ahead of myself by saying that this problem is probably pervasive throughout the country?
It is, but it's worse more, in Charlotte.
It was more acute in Charlotte. Huh?
It's more acute in Charlotte, and why it's more acute in Charlotte is because of the government in Charlotte, the Charlotte government. Is taking no type of action to curtail this type of behavior.
Okay.
Now, everybody you talk to, city government, from the mayor on down, down to city councilman, the first thing they say is, well, there's nothing we can do about it. Yes, there are a lot of things they can do about it, because the Fair Housing Act, it specifies what groups you cannot discriminate against. Well, you can't mm-hmm. discriminate against anybody because of race. You can't discriminate against anybody because of their family status, by their sex, by their some type of disability or their nationality or their religion. The Fair Housing Act specifies who you cannot discriminate against. And the last time I read the Fair Housing Act, investors were not a protected group. So there's a lot of things that city government can do to stop the behavior of these investors coming in here, basically taking away the foundation that most average people use to build some type of wealth, and not only wealth in the present, but generational wealth. Home ownership is not the only way, a way.
Well, it's a foundational aspect of the American dream, without getting too cliche.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. Right now, young people, they can't do that unless they're making a lot of money. I mean, and even if they're making a lot of money, you still, just like I was talking to a young guy, a PA, for this instance, talk about moving to Charlotte. I said, well, what type of, how much can you afford on your income? He said, about $300,000. Well, but unfortunately, $300,000 is not going to get him a whole lot in Charlotte. It's not. Not what he's thinking. You know, a lot of people don't really find out that their $300,000, their $200,000 approvals is not going to get them much. They don't find that out until they go out and start looking.
Right.
And they're building apartments by the hundreds. No, they're building apartments by the thousands in Charlotte. And the reason they're building these apartments by the thousands is because they know that people are not going to be able to buy homes anymore. And what they're building all these apartments, or, you know, Charlotte has had a reputation for years of not having any ghettos, you know, like the big cities of, you know, Philadelphia and Chicago and New York, Detroit. We've pretty much been immune to that. But they are building the ghettos of the future. Mm. That's what they're doing in Charlotte right now. And I don't see any type of investment in the infrastructure or the roads or the schools or anything to accommodate this influx of people that they're enticing to come to Charlotte to live in these apartments.
Wow. It's kind of like they know how many jails to build based on reading levels in third grade.
Exactly right.
So you're saying they're building these apartments because they know people are not going to have anywhere to live, and they're going to have to live in these apartments.
That's right. That's why they built them. Used to be a time, just like, for example, when I came out of college, I graduated from college in 1976, and I bought my first house in 1977. Mm-hmm. Nice little three-bedroom brick house, and I could pay for that house on just my salary. And when I bought that house, I was making about $180 a week. You know, rounded out to about $10,000 a year. But I mean, but you could live off of that. You could live off of that. But now you can't. You struggle right now and live off $10,000 a month in Charlotte.
Hey Joe, I'm gonna ask you one question, and I'm gonna leave you alone for a minute. Like you just said, you know, I'm kind of slow, but like you just said, you could live off that a while back. Why do they keep raising the prices on stuff? Because they're going to have to keep paying people enough money to live. What makes that happen? I mean, what's the formula that causes prices to go up, and then you're going to have to raise wages to meet the prices? I'm confused a little bit.
Well, I'm not confused about it either. I'm not an economist, and I don't profess to be one. But that's a good question. Why you keep raising folks' wages, and if you're going to keep raising the price of everything,
right?
You know, you might keep prices stable and keep wages stable and keep prices stable.
Cause you remember when you say at the store we had a 3-4 penny cookie.
Yeah,
three cookies for a penny. Then the Big Jack cookie cost one. You had to pay a penny for just that one cookie, but that was a big joker.
Right.
Weird, man. I don't get it. I'm confused.
Well, you know, we used to sell gas for 30 cents a gallon.
Yeah. So why it costs so much?
Part of the problem also is tied to the fact that we are a global economy now, and a lot of times the cost of goods and services is not necessarily dependent upon what's happening here in the United States, but what's happening abroad as well. And the value of the dollar fluctuates. Sometimes that controls prices of things, the gross national product. So a lot of factors involved. So it's not like there's we have the United States, the central government, but some of these economic factors are beyond the borders of the United States.
Right.
But there are things within the borders that we can control. And every time we bring up that topic, you get this usual suspects start talking about redistribution of wealth and communism. And those are like really code words that there is enough money to go around. There's enough money to keep these prices down and pay everybody a decent wage. But the forces that be, the oligarchs, the people that really own the money, they don't want it, and they're pulling the levers. In other words, they need an underclass. They can't be who they are if they don't have an underclass. They can't. I mean, I heard somebody float today that they wanted a mandatory $60,000 a year salary for teachers, which to me is still a little low if you ask me. But that's not going to go anywhere. That's not going to fly. I'm just telling you, it's not. I wish you would, but you know, run this country, and I know how the system works. Once you understand the system, certain things you just know not going to happen, period.
Well, see,
you
need one thing, too. Yeah, like I said, you need that underclass. And another thing is the less money you pay a person, the longer you can keep him working. Because if you pay him too much, of course, he can start saving money. And he can eventually start his own business, or he can have money to save up and start moving around and looking for different opportunities. But if you keep him at just enough money to live on, he can't leave that job.
Yeah, think about those little factory towns that we had to deal with when we were coming up. Those folks in that factory town, if you paid them a certain amount of money, above a certain amount of money, they could go out and probably start a business, buy a house, and they would leave that factory.
They were leading them just enough. They've got to come in at that next week to get that check, and it's never enough. So they've got to work a little harder every time and keep that little carrot in front of them. Like, if I work a little harder, I can get that brass ring, but it's always elusive. That's
right.
Built into the that's built into capitalism. That's baked into the fabric.
Yeah, because without poor people, there wouldn't be any rich people. That's how rich people get rich, is by exploiting other people. And I was looking at something the other day. It was somewhat of a documentary, and they were talking about basically what we are just saying now, how the system is geared towards the upper so-called upper class, or the other words, the people with the money. The only way they can maintain their position of wealth, and the only way they can continue to be wealthy, is by exploiting poor people. And that's what they do systematically. And of course, and unfortunately, just like in the city of Charlotte, for example, city governments generally help them do it with the policies they pass. They help them exploit people by not enforcing the laws in their neighborhood, not enforcing the codes in their neighborhood, causing their property values to depreciate, causing crime to be in certain neighborhoods, not providing the same infrastructure on one side of town as they do on the other side of town. Just like in Charlotte, for example, tell when white folks are starting, you know, to gentrify a neighborhood. Next thing you know, they got shrubberies down the medium. They start come out and cutting the grass in the right of way. Start putting in bicycle trails and new parks and centers and all that start coming to the area. So why is it coming to the area now? And these black folks been over here for the last 50 years driving through potholes. And now you same neighborhood, you can come through there and put in bicycle trails now. Like I said, government, the two biggest enemies that has always been for working class people in America. And the reason I say working class people is because people are being exploited at the same level as black people, because there are not enough black people for them to exploit to keep the system going. So they have to exploit a large number of white people also. And the government and big business, those have always been the biggest enemy of working class people, regardless of what color you are. And back to our theme that we had decided on earlier, is that it's no longer about black and white. What it is right now is wrong and right. Wrong and what's right.
Joe,
what's good and what's evil. That's where we are in America.
But see, Joe, the challenge for black people, white people, and all the different colors is that we understand, and most rational people understand, it's really about wrong and right. But that does not work in the capitalistic, white nationalistic racist system that sometimes we find ourselves in. And I'm not saying everybody is white nationalist or racist. I'm just saying that black and that right and wrong doesn't. Because you know what you have to do, Joe? In order to maintain the current system, you can't have all the right folks on the same side. That would upset the system. So what you have to do, you have to keep those folks who are so-called right fighting each other. And that's when you inject things like race, like sex,
right,
and all these wedge issues,
sexuality.
Right. You got to keep that group fighting among themselves so they don't come together.
That's right.
That would upset the system.
And that's why they keep pushing these issues like same-sex marriage and abortion. And, you know, just like I said years ago, I'm not so concerned about what goes on in folks' bedrooms. What I'm concerned about is what's decided in these boardrooms. That's what we need to focus
exactly.
on. We need to get away from this bedroom politics. It's a divisive issue, and it's an issue nobody's ever going to agree on. But what it does, it keeps people, they may have a whole lot of other interests in common, but they'll take something like same-sex marriage and abortion and all that to tear us apart.
And CRT and all this stuff, they just like that, boy. You don't want all the poor people to start getting together and say, hey, we're going to demand better wages. We're going to demand child care. We're going to demand health services. Because then the folks that have all this money, they're going to have to act because they won't have any workers. They won't have anybody to exploit. So if you get the poor whites fighting the poor blacks, fighting the poor Hispanics, then you can even get the poor people siding with the oppressor.
Right.
And therein lies the problem.
That's a problem.
You know, and
because
like,
of these, who is that? Like you look at these stories about what's happening with the prison system and so forth. Like, I think Martin Luther King doing these marches, they used to talk to the jailers. They say, you should be in here with us.
Exactly.
Right.
Dr. Kings, how much you make, man? You told me, man, you should be in here with us. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Brother for Real Radio Show. We're going to take a quick break, come back, switch gears a little bit. But what we want to know is, how can we show some progress? I mean, we're still spinning in the same old wheel, spinning in the same old mud we've been spinning in since the 60s. Still the same stuff. And that's because, I think, like Big Brother Joe said, we're fighting the wrong thing. It's a wrong and right fight, you know?
Amen.
Because if we win, let's say we win the racial fight, and then we still wrong amongst each other, we're not going to have any progress. And that's the case.
All the good, fair-minded white people should get together with all the good, fair-minded black people. Then you will start seeing some real change.
That's right.
As long as you keep us fighting each other, you got the Ron DeSantis of the world and the Donald Trumps of the world and the Ron Johnsons of the world and all these crazy folks out here trying to keep the reasonable people from sitting down talking to each other. Only then we're going to start seeing some real progress.
That's
going to be very hard to do. It's going to be very hard to do.
The number to call is 215-383-3872. Call and talk to us sometime, man. I don't know what's up with that. People don't like to talk. People talk about this, but they don't want to talk to you. 215-383-3872. We'll be right back.
Love. I just ain't the same. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us are money making. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young ones faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive, love is found. Forgiving people dying, children hurting, and crying. You hurt them, 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 you hurt
You're on back already. Number to call is 215-383-3872. We're going to be talking here for another 30 minutes or so. But, brothers, I enjoyed you guys talking about the subjects we were covering earlier. And, yes, sir.
And see, and what a lot of people don't realize, see, the reason segregation started in the first place, it wasn't because white folks felt that they were superior to black folks and they didn't want to be with them. Came up with the idea of segregation was aristocrats. Aristocrats or the capitalists. And the whole reason they came up with segregation in the first place is because they did not want the newly free slaves to form a coalition with the working class white people, poor people that the South was full of. That's why they came up with the idea of segregation. And Dr. Martin Luther King talked about it in one of his books. That's why they came up with the whole idea of segregation in the first place. Because right after slavery, they didn't have any segregation. There was no segregation right after slavery. But the aristocrats, the bourgeois or capitalists or whatever you want to call them, they felt like if you allow these newly free slaves with voting rights and other rights to come together with these working class poor people, they would lose their positions of power. And that's the reason they came up with the idea of segregation.
Mm. Wow. What a low-down thing to do.
Low-down thing to do.
Hey, guys.
They'll do whatever it takes to keep poor white people in the state of mind that they're in. They'll do whatever it takes. And see, and people talk a lot about black history not being taught in the school, but white history is not taught in the schools. There's no accurate history taught in the schools because if the school system was doing what it's supposed to do, that would be a big step towards ending most of the problems we have in this country. But the school system has been taken over. Well, you know, just like you can look at what's going on down in Florida right now with DeSantis. The truth, trying to suppress people being able to think and have open minds where they can see the system, see what's going on for themselves. They're going to do whatever it takes, as long as it takes, to keep people from thinking and keep people from coming together. Because I was just thinking about, before we had this show, I was listening to something on the radio. I said, isn't that something? I was listening at the Republicans talking about cuts and all that thing they were talking about. I said, isn't that amazing? They are talking about cutting programs that benefit the people that voted for them to put them in power.
Yeah. And they'll vote for them again. How they do that?
Propaganda.
They'll do it again, bro.
Just like they're always talking about communism. They're like, communism is the worst thing in the world. But what they do is they take all of their political strategies straight from the Communist Handbook, the Communist Manifesto. And the masses of the people are ignorant. They are not capable of governing themselves. And that's what they believe. That's why you have so many efforts for voter suppression, trying to divide people, to stop people from having their rights, challenging elections and things of that nature. That comes from the communist handbook. But you get these same clowns, you bring up something about anytime you start talking about anything that's going to benefit working class people, first thing they start talking about is he's advocating communism. That's what the first thing they'll say. And then the poor working class people, they don't even, if you ask them what does communism mean, they can't not one of them explain it to you. But that's just a word that they've learned, they taught them to fear.
Right. Well, Robert, you getting ready to say something, man, about Black History Month, I think.
Oh, I was just reminding everyone that today is the first day of Black History Month. And I think that while it is a great opportunity to reflect on the past accomplishments of our ancestors, it's also a great time to be proactive and to set goals, such as I've laid down the mantle, I'm going to repeat it again, that we can sit and sing about Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass and I Have a Dream speech. But is that moving the ball today? I say let's do that. But at the same time, what about building our infrastructure in our communities, our businesses, putting our people to work? And I'm taking this approach of service this month. That's going to be my theme, is that we should be building businesses that people in our community and any community will be proud to support and say, I'm glad that I know that person, I know that business. I'm proud to give them my money. I'm proud to send people that I know to patronize that business. So I'm throwing down the mantle to Black business owners. If we want people to support us, we want people to give us their money, people to refer our family and friends and other stakeholders to that business, I challenge everybody to raise your bar, to up your standards. Because some of that reputation that Black businesses have received has been warranted, but much of it is not warranted. It's that same old divide and marginalization, demonizing the Black business, the ice is not cola, that old syndrome, it still persists today. But let's not give them that pass. Let's up the standards of our businesses to the point where that criticism is not valid and it doesn't hold any water.
You mean the white man's eye is not colder than Black people's eyes?
No, I mean, I did a test on my show one day.
Uh-huh.
I actually went out and bought some ice. I'm going to tell you one thing, guys. It's hard to find some Black man's ice. I'm going to tell you, boy, that was a hard experiment. I drove all over town. I drove all over town trying to find some Black ice. I found Black ice. I think some like you rub into your muscles. Some are like some hair put in your hair. I mean, not that. I mean real ice that you put in like a soda or some Kool-Aid to make it colder. Everything that I said, give me some Black ice. People had a different description or definition. Oh man, that's back there in the next to the hair butter. No. I mean real Black ice. No, man. You throw that. You put some of that on your rheumatiz. No, not that. I want some real Black ice. I'm doing an experiment on if Black people's ice is just as cold as white people's ice. I finally found some. I think this guy was like I think he may have been an Arab or something. I said, he's close enough. I'm going to take that ice. I just couldn't find it. I mean, that tells you the problem we have in our community. We can't even find some Black people's ice to do the comparison. So I took his ice, And then, of course, I had no trouble finding the white people. Like, they was all over the place. I mean, I just right now, you can throw a rock and hit like five white grocery stores and gas station that had ice. You need to go outside. They got the little metal box out there. Sometimes they got it inside in the shelf. So I go in and grab that ice. So I grabbed this ice from this guy like it was an Arab or something. So I got his ice and I did my test. And guess what, guys? Ice was not the same. The white man's ice was not colder. I must say, it was about I can truly say, the ice is the same. So one day I will do this test. I will actually find a black shop that has ice. It's his ice. That tells you how much work we have to do right there. You can't even do the darn test.
Well, maybe that means that the white man ice is cold because he got somebody.
Guys, I never thought it would be this. But I didn't think the test would be that. It would be that hard to even do the darn test. I think we gotta, before we start talking about whose ice is the coldest, we gotta get somebody.
One of the things, I had the pleasure of being a part of the Martin Luther King committee that planned the events for our Martin Luther King weekend this year. Worked with a group of very energetic and powerful people. But my last words to the group were, Dr. King, one of the things that stuck foremost in my head of all the things I've heard Dr. King say in one of his speeches was, that black folk need to stick together. Now,
well,
that's not what we're here on Martin Luther King Day, because that's not the narrative people like to push from Dr. King. But we really do have to stick together and support each other, like you're saying, Robert. We really have to find ways and means of supporting each other so that we can thrive, because nobody else really cares about us, you know. It's not like
That's right.
It's a dog-eat-dog world out here, guys. So we really do have to stick together in order for us to make it. Kids depending on it. Even your families. People, you start with your family. I tell people, you want to start practice on sticking together as a people, start with your family. Make peace with your family. Try that. And then you can start in peace with others, because we have some real issues is having peaceful families, you know.
Yeah.
So it's tough out here, man.
Like you said,
you need to start with your families. And of course, and from time to time, you know, I recruit agents to go out and write insurance under the Gatewood name, letting them use the company that I use to write insurance. And I always give them what I consider a fair deal. And because I just tell them I'm going to give you the same deal that the man gave me when I started. And that's what I'm going to give you. And so, but the biggest thing I hear from all of them, I said, we want to start your business. I said, you can start with your family. I said, because you're not asking them to spend any new money. You're just asking them to spend, they already spend them with you.
Right.
And the thing I hear over and over and over and over again, I can't do business with my family. I can't do business with my friends. And that's like I told a little girl yesterday. I said, well, that's a good way to find out who your real friends are. And I said, now my business, I said, the foundation of my business is my family. I said, just like I had a young lady working in my office one time, working, putting my files together. Actually, my granddaughter. And she said, Papa, I got an idea. She said, you got so many people in your files named Gatewood. Why don't you just put together a Gatewood file cabinet? And I said, you know what? That's a good idea.
Good idea.
And that's what I did. I just went and put together, took a whole
you know, whole tray, and I just put all the Gatewoods in there. So when somebody named Gatewood called me, I don't have to look through the G's. I just go to the Gatewood file. But
dang, that's a good idea.
But the point I was making was that to this young lady, Bill, that's how well my family has supported me in my business. I said, and that's where I'm telling you, you need to start with. I said, you got a whole big old, you got a phone with full of phone numbers, email addresses, and friends on Facebook and all that stuff. I said, that's where you start at. That's where you start.
That's so true, Joe.
And but my friends, I said, everybody I call my friend has got insurance with me. Everybody.
Amazing.
Everybody I call my friend has insurance with me. You see Joker over in my house eating salmon and steaks and hamburgers. Every one of them got insurance with me.
Let me ask you this, Joe. Is that a criteria for eating steaks and salmon?
Yeah.
I tell you one thing. I'm not gonna drop my insurance with Joe if I want a steak. I tell you that.
You know, your dog on too.
Hey, Joe, I thought it was because I was wrong, man. I didn't know it was because I had all that insurance with you, third, man.
I know y'all just kidding and joking, but I'm just saying that the point I'm making is like what you said, when you start supporting, going out talking about you're going to support people, you need to start with your family.
That is true.
You need to start with your family.
That is true. And we, I try my best to support my support, and I try to be an example of that. I try to, and I tell people, Joseph and Robert, and everybody else listening, the stuff that people are not happy about normally in their family or any other relationship is petty stuff. Petty. Lord, it's petty.
Petty.
I mean,
stuff.
Just petty.
Yeah.
Crazy,
it's
man.
It's amazing how these,
sad about that.
In these other communities, you have, I mean, literally arch enemies still partnering and working together. I mean, these folks done fought and called names, shot at each other at one time or the other. But somehow, when it comes to enterprise and making money, they let all acquaintances be forgot. But boy, some folks in our community, Lord have mercy.
I'm going to tell you something too, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
You run across a white man and you hit that joker with a good idea and where it's going to make him some money and it's going to help you, he'll do it at the drop of a hat. You won't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
He ready to go.
Yep.
You come up with a win-win situation with a white man where he gonna, you can show him where he can make some money, he's going to go along with you.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
We're a tough crowd, man. I tell you what, man.
Let me end where I started, okay?
Okay.
Let me end where I started. If you are patronizing a black business and you are a black person, I'm not saying give them more credit or more passes. Give them at least the same amount of opportunities to make mistakes as you give everybody else. You don't have to do favoritism. Just don't have that fast hair trigger when it comes to black businesses. You give black people one chance, and not only that, you use that one slight to paint a broad brush on the entire black business community. I tried a black business once. Shame on you if you've only tried one. Shame on you.
Right. Boy.
Done. I'm done.
I done had some Negroes say some stuff to me. as an insurance agent. Like I say, I chose Pat. I'm going to tell my wife a long time ago. And I actually tried to do it. I tried to get out the insurance business. And the reason I chose Pat, I told my wife, I'm getting out the insurance business. I said, and the reason I'm getting out of it is because I don't want to end up hating my own people. That's right. That's what I told them.
Thank God it's not all of us. Thank God it's not all of us. There's some of us, like the brothers on this phone. I'm telling you, guys, I've been dealing with the same black bank for about 30 years. People have told me, why do you leave that bank? They don't have as many locations. They don't have as all the apps that the other bank has. I said, because I want to support the black bank, period.
Right.
End of discussion.
I mean, just like we got a town over at Mechanics and Farmers Bank, and I was looking at our bank, Mechanics and Farmers Bank, and I started paying more interest. We made $4.25 this month. And my wife, she said, you know, we ain't got no money over there in that bank, no way to try to make no money. She said, we just trying to support the black bank. And she would call Wells Fargo. They ain't paying us nothing either. Because they ain't all of them doing the same. The mechanical phone, now they probably a little lower than everybody else, but ain't enough of a difference that's gonna make a difference in your life. So you just feel good about wake up every morning with a good fuzzy feeling. Well, we support the black bank. We go to the black doctor. We go to the black dentist. So forth and so on. Wherever we can find black business support, we support them.
Yeah. So where do we go from here? I'm tired, man. You know, we really have, we just don't seem to be getting it, man. We're not getting it.
You know what,
Leon? Yeah.
We're just gonna have to keep chugging along like we've been doing for the last 50 years. Just get one when we can. I'm convinced there's not gonna be no mass revelation or no mass revolution where our people would open up their minds. That's not. I'm going to tell you when it came close to happening.
Okay.
It came close to happening right after that million man march.
Right.
We were on a good trajectory, on the right trajectory after that million man march. I saw a whole lot of folks' minds begin to open up and start thinking differently and start thinking about entrepreneurship, supporting black businesses, black awareness. It was out there. And something happened and stopped it.
Of course, the devil, whoever he is, always finds a way to change your trajectory.
That's right.
Progress. Whoever he is. So we just have to fight harder. The righteous people have to fight hard. We have to find like minds and convince them of the need to fight harder. Because the evil side is strong and fighting. They're fighting. They do not give up.
They're diligent.
They're diligent, brother. They are on it.
They don't give up.
On the TV right now. You go on Facebook right now. They out there right now working.
Like I told my Sunday school class years ago when I was teaching Sunday school, I said, the devil is busy. How can the devil going to do his job? I said, the only thing we got to do is make sure we do ours.
That's right.
I said, he working. He ain't taking no break.
People quick to say, the devil's busy. I always counter it by saying, God is too.
That's right.
God is busy.
The devil got folks helping him. Devil got folks helping him, and God got people helping him.
That's right.
Well,
gentlemen.
So if you're going to let the devil outperform you, you need to quit going to church.
Gentlemen, I'm going to end this on a positive note. We had a, I've been meeting with the Lion King Jr. cast and, of course, some other things we're trying to do around the Hollis Center. The young people, working with us so talented and energetic and positive, and we're getting a lot of middle-aged young people to join us, help with work with us. People like, I can start giving names, but I mess up. But anyway, people that are joining in and help us, I appreciate them so very much for working with us and doing things that they don't have to do. They don't seem to have time to do, but they're finding ways to do it, finding ways to do time. But anyway, so I also like to, so coming up on February the 18th, we're going to do a mini performance of the play in Waxhaw, North Carolina at Marvin, M-A-R-V-E-N, AME Zion Church at 12 o'clock. So, and I told the young people, well, Miss Thomasina Spencer, who asked us to do this, said, Mr. Gatewood, we want you to bring those children up there to so that our kids can see they can do something besides just sit on these in these benches in the church. In other words, she's trying to tell them they have power to do more than they're doing. And I try to explain to our young people, do you understand people are using you at your age to motivate other young people? You and yours from Anson County here in Waynesboro, where everybody think nobody has any sense, they're using you to motivate kids from across the state. So people have to find a way to know that the power, know the power within them and use it.
That's right.
I get chills talking about this, especially when I'm talking to young people and I look at them and I can tell they're not really getting. You don't get it, man.
Mm-hmm.
People are using you to motivate their kids. In other words, they see motivation already in you. They see you already as a success story. Take the time to see yourself as a success story and live off it. Brothers, it's been live. I'm gonna end this on Sweet Love, Robert. That's going to be my closing song for the next few years.
Go for it, brother.
Who's going to be up?
Show me a river that's so deep.
How much going to play off?
Show me a mountain so high. I'll show you love
that I have to give you the MP3 of the Gatewood Brothers, too.
Yeah.
Show me a place where dreams are for dreamers and all the things you wish come true, yeah. I'd wish the world had all happy people. Then there'd be no more wishing to do. Oh, 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 oh. Sun shines over the rainbow.
That was good, brothers. Y'all have a good night.
Good night, brothers.
Good night.